Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine BP. Call Dr. Most right now.
He's the busiest guy I know, and every spring around this time, my friend Dr. Most says, you know, we're going to play more golf this year. But no. No, all he does is work. Work, 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 work. Plus, the lovely Patty lives in North Carolina, so you go back and forth to North Carolina. So I'm surprised your dogs haven't filed a lawsuit against you. When are you home?
Yeah, they actually should file a lawsuit against me. But I actually played three times in the last 4 days. So
yeah, but you were in North Carolina,
right?
A
little bit guilty. Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Got to play with my uncle. Got to play with your good friend, Peter DeYoung.
How's he doing?
And he's doing great.
I got to check in with him.
Yep.
And our mutual pal, Emil Esposito, is teaching again, so I'm going to throw his phone number out. So anybody that wants a golf lesson from one of the all-time greats, you got to get that lined up.
He's a wonderful person and a wonderful teacher. And if anybody wants to take lessons, he's the guy because he doesn't get super technical.
No, so, he doesn't get super technical. He looks at you and he works with you to make your game better. And by the way, Dave, I believe he's helped you quite a bit.
He's helped me quite a bit. And you know what he said to me? It wasn't technical. He said, your grip's awful, your swing's awful. He said, we're going to fix it. And he did.
Yeah.
The famous story here, Doc, and I think you know it, is that Bob Collins and Orion Samuelson were doing a trip to Hawaii. I don't know if it was business or pleasure, but they weren't golfers, and they wanted to get some golf lessons before they went because they were going to play Kaanapali on Maui, which is this golf course where 9 holes are at sea level and the other 9 are up in the mountains. And so they started to take lessons. And
it's really pretty, but really hard.
It is hard, yeah. They started to take lessons, and the lessons didn't go well. And Orion eventually kind of got out of it. Collins didn't quit. And Emil got so frustrated with Collins at one point, he went out on the driving range about 60 yards in front of him, stood there, and went, hit me! Just hit me! And he couldn't hit him. My favorite part of the story, as Orion tells it, is, and by the way, Orion's 85th birthday yesterday. They get to Hawaii, and they had to send the beverage cart girl back to the clubhouse for balls. Not for beverages, not for a sandwich. They ran out of golf balls.
That's a little embarrassing.
Yeah, I think they both shot about 150, and they added them all up. All right, Doc, so we'll get to the subject at hand here in a second, but first, my cough is back, so, you know, I never like to make things about me, but I believe I'm representing most of Chicago when I say, what is the deal with this cough?
Yeah, and, you know, now I wish I could say, you know, anybody with springtime allergies, get ready, because as we get this warm-up, these coughs, these runny noses, all that's going to start to come back. You're going to start thinking, is this virus again? Am I sick again? And yet it's going to be the spring allergies that are really going to be kicking in here. For you, whether it's just, you know, a couple more days of just inflammation from the residual of that cough and that cold that you had for, God, you had it for over a month. I wouldn't be overly concerned right now, but people will start to get frustrated. Anybody who's had that upper respiratory infection and now come into spring allergies.
Yeah, I don't, but it's a cough.
Yeah.
Like a solo one-hitter. And then 2 minutes later, it happens again. So Sandberg and Dave have to put up a listening to that all morning. And then if you hear me turn the microphone off because you don't hear me for a second, it's because I'm trying to time the cough while I interview somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, the troubles I have.
And cough is a defensive mechanism for us. Anytime you have any drainage that's going down, the body's trying to say keep it out. So as you start to minimize the drainage, the amount of coughing will stop. And it can also be caused just by any inflammation and irritation. But, you know, I wouldn't be overly concerned if it's once every so often. I mean, Dave might be upset, Mary might be upset, but you shouldn't be concerned.
Just count on me coughing every 2 minutes.
No, we're not upset.
We're not upset, but I would say it's probably every 5. I mean, it's a consistent one cough.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weirdest thing.
Mm-hmm. That's a kennel cough. And, Doc, I was feeling good till I went to Arizona, and then I felt like I got it, you know, once I got off the plane again.
Yeah, two things there. One, going to Arizona, anytime anybody flies, we're concerned about it. But when you say, as soon as I got off the plane, it's because you're being exposed to things that you hadn't been exposed to. More allergens, more things down there because of plants that are popping down there than here. Anybody says, as soon as I got off the plane, I got sick. No, you didn't. As soon as you got off the plane, you got exposed to something that your body caused inflammation from.
Don't you mock me. All right, very important topic when we come back. We're going to talk about PTSD, and this is a big deal, and it's being handled better in some areas, and fortunately, a lot of areas, it's not being touched yet. But there are things you need to know about PTSD, about you or about somebody you love. And we're not just talking about military here. We're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, really, in any form of life. It's Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. How'd you play, by the way?
I played fairly well the first day and okay after that. I played not bad. I mean, enjoyed it.
Was this at Pinehurst?
Yeah.
Patty beat you?
Once.
Nice. Yeah, I figured so. Yeah. All right, let's talk about PTSD. We say PTSD, we think of soldiers coming home from combat. Obviously, that's a huge, huge deal, and it needs to be treated the same. But we also know that PTSD victims can be victims of violent assaults and fire and physical or sexual abuse, car accidents. I mean, any significantly traumatic event in life, right?
Absolutely. Any of those that can trigger something and the trauma that continues in your mind can be triggered by many, many different things. And it's something that we need to be aware of because that PTSD, you're going to get those reminders and it's going to come back and cause those stresses and those anxiety and the depression over and over again. So identifying those individuals is very key.
Now, here's what we know. These mass shootings that have gone on are obviously horrific. But in the last 3 weeks, the father of a little girl who was killed at Newtown killed himself. And this is a guy who's been an activist for other families and trying to make sensible changes in gun laws and all of that, and has been subjected almost daily to these unbelievably cruel, sick, twisted internet creeps talking about how your daughter didn't die, you're making it up, they're actors, you're an actor, the whole deal. And then we know that two teens who survived the Marjorie Stoneman shooting in Florida, in Parkland, also killed themselves, and some say survivor's guilt was the link there. But obviously, all of these folks had PTSD.
Yeah, and it is. It's that PTSD / survivor's guilt, especially for those high school students. And it's very sad because we see it in the media. We get the big splash. We follow it for a week. And then for many of us, it goes away. But for those individuals that survived that and lived through that, it doesn't go away. They went back to that same school. They're seeing their same friends. They're on their anniversary date of when this occurred, which unfortunately is February 14th, every Valentine's Day, that's what's going to be their memory of Valentine's Day, of their friends that they lost during this. So PTSD is not, oh, I'm going to get treatment for a month and then I'm going to be done. This is something that is going to continue through their lives, and it's very important that we help identify these individuals to make sure they get continued treatment.
So are we seeing more of suicide risk and threats in teens, or are we hearing about it more?
No, well, both, actually, but we are, unfortunately, we are seeing more. It probably surprised people, but suicide is the number two cause of death from the ages, between the ages of 10 and 24. That's a staggering thing to think about, that here we are, the healthiest that we've ever been in our lives, and yet the number two opportunity to die is from suicide. And the NIH just did a study where they took 6,000 kids that went to the emergency room for many different reasons and just asked them four simple questions. In the past few weeks, have you wished you were dead? In the past few weeks, have you felt that your family would be better off if you were dead? In the past week, have you thought about killing yourself? Have you ever tried or thought about killing yourself? One-third of the kids tested positive between the ages of 10 and 12.
So
that's staggering.
No, it's unbelievable.
It's crazy, Doc. Yep. And, I have to say, I'm around kids. I have, a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old. And like my parents did to me when they would say, you think you've got it rough. You don't know how rough I had it. So-and-so drank and somebody threw this and that type of stuff. And you don't have to deal with that. But kids now have a different kind of pressure that we don't define, that isn't the kind of pressure we had. Where is the pressure coming from?
It's coming from a lot of different places, Mary. In school, grades are so important right now. Kids are stressed to provide, to get the best grades they possibly can, or they're not going to be able to go to college. So that's one thing, just the stress that we put on them. Look at the activities that these kids play in now. We used to play baseball on the street. We didn't play travel soccer, travel baseball. You have to be the best athlete you possibly can. And probably one of the ones that's the most discouraging is the cyberbullying. When you were bullied, when any of us, here in the you know, the five of us that we're talking here, when any of us were bullied, we were bullied in front of a small group of people by one individual, and as soon as it was over, you felt bad, but boy, it was done. With cyberbullying now, it's out there. It's shared with hundreds, if not thousands of people, and continue to be there. So that embarrassment and that stress of cyberbullying, so those are probably the biggest three. What we're doing with kids, pushing them in athletics as much as we can, what we're doing with school, and then cyberbullying.
Yeah, and the cyberbullying thing is why you need to stay in touch with what your kids are doing on Instagram and Facebook and wherever else they live online. And you'll get some bark back and, hey, why are you so nosy and stay out of my business and all of that. You're not there to be your kid's best friend. You'll be there to take care of your child and be the parent, and you need to be involved. And it's not snooping around when they're not looking. Just let them know as early as possible. You are going to be checking in on them. Just make sure they understand the rules.
Understand the rules and make sure that they trust you. You know, be there. You said you don't want to be their best friend. That's true. But you also want to be there to make sure that they're the one, they feel that you're the one that they can go to.
Right.
With a concern or a question or, you know, tell me what I should do or show me how I can get through this. You know, people come to the doctor's office. We screen for depression. We look for these things. But to be honest with you, in a 15-20 minute office visit, you're a smart kid. You can get through that without pushing that out. Because we don't know all the signs of depression. You know, are you having trouble sleeping? Do you feel anxious? Are you not doing things that you used to do that were a lot of fun? How are you doing in school? You know, how are you doing in school? I'm doing all right. We don't ask, well, did you used to get A's and now you're getting C's? So some of that stuff you guys need to see in your kids and see in your family members and bring those forward to the doctors to make sure that we can help them.
And like everything else you've said for years, don't write it off as it's just a teenager in a phase. Yeah, it could be. But what's the downside to finding out? What's the downside to saying we're going to go talk to somebody? Yeah, your kid's going to be mad at you, but you're going to get some peace of mind, and you're going to go through the process because some of the symptoms you mentioned, feels anxious or worried, frequent tantrums or changing to irritability many times, stomach aches, headaches without a physical explanation, can't sit still, trouble sleeping, loses interest in things they used to enjoy, avoid spending time with friends, trouble doing well at school, grades declining, fears getting heavier or skinnier, exercises, diets obsessively, and on and on, lower, no energy. Look, all of those behaviors partly could be written off as it's a kid going through a phase, but maybe it's not.
Yep. And we have to get past the stigma of depression and anxiety being something negative. You know, we talk about, hey, I'm going to teach you what to look for a stroke. And people, oh, I'm going to take care of that. But when we talk about this is what you need to look for with your child with the possibility of a depression or anxiety, they're like embarrassed. They feel like, oh, no, my kid's not depressed. You know, we have to understand that this is an illness, and it's not something that's a sign of weakness.
And it also is not a sign that you failed as a parent. There's a clinical chemical process in the brain that can be changed, and it doesn't mean you failed as a parent. Failure as a parent is not doing your job.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you think about what these kids are going through. Like I said, in school, we never had active shooter drills at school. So these kids are being totally, all the time, this is in front of them. It's on the news. It's on the media. It's on their phones. So we really need to, I hate to say, be more protective of our kids, but we really need to start looking out more because they are having more stress than we ever had.
All of these notes, and there's a lot here, will be posted with Doc's podcast. When does that happen, Samber?
In the next hour.
And also, Doc, somebody said, could I have PTSD from being fired? All jokes aside, yeah, of course you can, because it's
absolutely
a traumatic event, right?
Yep, absolutely. Hey, and Mayor, when you post it, can you also put the suicide prevention hotline number, 1-800-273-8255?
Absolutely.
1-800-273-8255. Last question. Somebody brought up EMDR as well, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Is that a form of PTSD?
No, I think it's a form of treatment, actually. I don't know it, to be honest with you.
All right, so we'll talk about it next time. EMDR are the initials.
I will look it up.
Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. Well, therapy does make it sound like it's a treatment.
Yep.
Doc, as always, thank you very much. And hang on a second. I got to talk to you off the air and whine a little bit. You saw that coming, didn't you? Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. And we'll come back to the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.